For this and all Clinical Updates podcasts, a 0.25 AMA PRA Category 1 credit will be available for a limited time. To claim credit, view the slide deck associated with this podcast and complete the evaluation found in the slides. Speakers, planners, and CME staff do not have any relevant financial relationships with ineligible companies to disclose.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Clinical Updates. Today, we will be talking about lymphedema in our podcast with Sarah Greely Tanner. And first and foremost, hello and welcome, Sarah.
Hello, and thank you for having me.
Thank you for joining me. Of course, I wanted to talk about lymphedema, which I get to see quite a bit because it can be a risk factor and a differential for cellulitis. But as always, I'll try to wear the hat for what's important for primary care providers to know and do. So let's kick it off by saying or by defining what is lymphedema.
Lymphedema is a chronic and a progressive condition that is caused by the failure of the lymphatic system to receive the fluid and transport it back to the cardiovascular systems. And it initially is a very watery fluid, but as the time goes on, it becomes more dense. And then we start to see the progression between swelling and sores and pain.
It can be quite problematic, as we all know. One thing I wanted to ask you, first off, we have a set of great slides attached to this presentation, and we will not dwell much on what the function of lymphedema is, and because it carries a very important function, of course, of draining the lymphatic fluid. Now, one question that I had was, there's a primary and secondary lymphedema, right? The primary is kind of rare?
It is quite rare. It's usually a birth defect or in the lymphatic systems causing it, and or there's some disease processes that will do that. And you could be in an infant or teen set onset and or later on over 35, the tardy, which we have seen some of those as well. And we have seen some, like one of my youngest patients was 8 that had kicked in with the lymphedema.
Okay. Now, the bulk of what we will encounter is secondary, correct?
Yes, the majority of the people that we see are secondary from cancer, chronic venous insufficiencies, trauma. And there's been the oddity of someone getting a cellulitis infection. And then I had a lady who had a mosquito bite, got a cellulitis infection. Long story short, then she ended up with a lymphedema just because her system wasn't able to compromise and help with it.
Okay. Now, I wanted to navigate around something because you mentioned cancer-related. And of course, it is somewhat straightforward because of the history: breast cancer, lymphadenectomy, upper extremity. And in the lower extremities, if you have radiation or resection of the lymph nodes, correct? That will be your typical risk factor?
Yep. Like you're saying, the breast cancer as well as anything with the lymph nodes with the lower extremities. We occasionally will get head and face and neck lymphedema if they've had some surgeries regarding that area.
Okay. Now, one thing that I wanted to ask you is, and of course I have a bias, right? I see a lot of people that have lymphedema that I would say 99% are already following with you or somebody in wound care, but I see them for recurrent cellulitis and sometimes it's lymphedema, etc. And the only clear risk factor that I can find is obesity. So if you rank risk factors, which one is at the top of a risk factor if you leave aside an obvious one like malignancy, for example?
Right. I think when you start the chronic venous insufficiencies, the vein systems, and they're not able to transport, and then that becomes overloaded, leads into the lymphedema, as well as traumas. You know, if you have a degloving of a skin area, crush injuries will pop up as well.
Okay. So if I hear you right, it's in tandem with chronic venous stasis that will generate lymphedema.
Yep.
And there's a name for that, right?
Yep. We're going to lymphedema.
Flebo lymphedema,
And so that's when both systems, the venous system isn't working correctly, and then the lymphatic isn't able to compensate for it. So then they both overload, and then we start to see the skin changes, the tissue becoming harder or red, as well as potentially sores. And I know Angie is going to talk later about wounds.
Okay. Now, So then let me ask you this way then. The common recurring theme that I see, and of course I have a biased selection of patients, is obesity,
yep,
venostasis, or obesity, venostasis, and lymphedema, or obesity and just lymphedema, unless the lymphedema is obscuring the findings of the venostasis. Would I define be the kind of prototypical patient?
Yeah, that is pretty typical of both, like you said, the obesity leading to the lymphatic system, as well as when they have the combination of the chronic venous insufficiency and obesity. And so those are a little harder patients to treat because of the treatments we do, but there are options to help them so they can be more efficient at it just because of their mobility, pain.
Yeah. And of course, we'll get to management. But first, I wanted to ask you, what is the, strictly speaking, for lymphedema, right? Can you describe the natural history of the patient develops this, looks like this, and over time they get this, and kind of a timeline of what happens?
Yeah. So in a and usually, whether it be the primary, obviously that's really rare, but as a secondary, whether it be a cancer-related, a trauma-related, what will happen is someone will say, oh, it's kind of feels weird. That's actually one of the first things people will say when we give their history. And then they'll start to notice.
We're like, what? Heavy? Just burning?
They'll say heavy, sometimes burning, sometimes tingly, or sometimes they really just say, I can't explain to you. It just feels different than my other limbs.
And what would you see then?
That we might not even hardly see anything in regards to symptoms. They just start reporting that. Well, then unfortunately, the progression will happen. Maybe, for example, I'll just use an arm because that's easier. But by the elbow or my forearm, it feels a little heavier. The swelling is there. My shirts aren't fitting right. And then, but it's worse in the evening, but better in the morning. Mm-hmm. And then as it progresses to the next stage, it's like, well, now my whole lower arm is swelling and I'm getting pitting. It's not going down overnight.
Kind of typical timeline is for that?
And everybody is different. I mean, every aspect of this can be, some people can go really fast. Mm-hmm. And the next person, it could be like, in fact, I just saw a lady the other day, she had surgery like 15 years ago. And she's like, well, now it's kind of bad to that point. So it's not, unfortunately, it doesn't always happen right after an incident. It can happen a lifetime on and whatever our body either accommodates to it and you're able to fluid after surgery. Otherwise, something becomes overwhelmed and then it just continues to progress if not managed, because you can't ever get rid of it. It always needs to be a lifetime management.
Okay. So the next step is the pedorange, you know, like orange skin and all that.
The orange peel skin. Yep. They'll get, people will get what look like little blisters. Uh-huh. So for the lymph is unable to move because the fluid is too protein rich, so it becomes thick and more pasty is what I always envision. Sure. And so then it starts to form blisters on the outside, which will be a clear lymph that potentially could drain out. And they kind of come and go depending on the activities and how much fluid is sitting in there. The orange peel skin, and then the discoloration starting to turn a little bit more dark, reddish coloring, not infection red, but just changing into that reddening pattern, as well as it becomes scaly. A lot of times as it progresses, it's just not able to keep the moisture.
And then an ulceration.
Yeah, exactly.
So one question kind of, I want to get into management, but I want to ask you a question first. Is there such a thing as an acute exacerbation of chronic lymphedema? Because sometimes I'll see people that are told they have recurrent cellulitis and the history just doesn't add up. Would you have an exacerbation of chronic lymphedema that could look like a cellulitis?
As the progression goes, and if it goes from a stage 3 progression, which is where it's kind of fibrotic and pitting a little bit, but as it moves into the elephantitis stage where it's quite chronic, I feel like it's hard to tell between the reddening of the skin, the skin gets fragile in regards to the infection and cellulitis component. But we see someone, we always say on the air of caution that they go to get checked out for that cellulitis. But a lot of times that whatever treatment the provider doesn't necessarily help them. And so with the wrapping, it really wasn't cellulitis, it's just the skin and the lymphedema and the lymphatic system. I'm able to take out the waste products to help.
So there are times in which truly people could have an exacerbation for a day for whatever reason. It looks redder, and then you leave it alone and goes back to where it was before. Is that part of the natural history?
It usually, I think some people will have one day occurrence, sometimes a flare up of it all. Otherwise, I feel like it just becomes that they need to come back in if they haven't been treated or if they have done the lymphedema treatment to manage it, to get the swelling to go back down and the redness and the skin improvements.
Okay. So let's get into management. One question that I had is, at what stage could you, if you attack it really hard, could you halt the progression and the patient who will have minimal to no skin manifestations?
Oh, we see people even post surgery for mastectomies right away for education factors.
Okay.
To get them going and just not to scare anybody, but just to like give them the education, the signs mm-hmm. to monitor what to watch for. And then we also always measure their limbs at that point. So we have a baseline of where they're at. So obviously that's the ideal situation because then we always tell them, if you notice any changes, talk to your primary, get back in, and we can then start the management process. When somebody is swelling, even into stage twos where they're swelling, but it's going down at night, that's obviously easier to catch and to get going. And it's harder as it goes to stage threes and the more pitting, and then obviously the velvetitis is harder, but it can get better with those. But the earlier we can get on it, obviously the longer, the better the outcome will be.
And just to be clear, the different stages are in the slides attached for the people listening. So, okay, you know, the ones who had a surgery and are expected as a risk are closely followed. But what do you do when you have a patient, you know, who starts having symptoms, you probably didn't hear about them or you didn't find anything, but then they have edema mm-hmm. and it's just reddening. What do you do in that stage? Let's call it a stage one into two. What do you do then?
Yeah, so we will see individuals in regards to that. We measure compared to the whatever limit may be, ask the history, check the skin, and then for example, if it's we have a guideline of like about 2.5 centimeters difference in the limb, and several measurements kind of guides us like, well, if you're greater than 2.5 centimeters, then maybe you should come in and do the manual lymph drainage, some wrapping, and then compression bandage. If it's a little bit, if it's less than that, then getting fit with the appropriate compression to make sure it fits appropriately, as well as the right gradient of between the 20 to 30, 30 to 40 millimeter mercury pressure, because then you can provide the supporting system to the lymphatic system to help with the swelling and the management, as well as some exercise and self-manual lymph drainage.
And this is a kind of question I ask to everybody that I interview. So if I hear between the lines, the moment a person has lymphedema has to be seen by Wunker. This is not something that the primary should manage. It's very time-consuming, etc. But is that a fair statement?
Yep. It could be, to get that in so that we don't end up, the infection part of it and or like the progression of the skin breakdown and wounds. Yeah.
Okay. I want you to talk to me a little bit about pumps, because let me ask you first, if I do compression, I'm keeping everything from coming down, but it accumulates higher. A pump will allow to come down and go up. It's more natural. Am I making a fair statement or?
Yeah, so there's two compression pumps. The standard compression pump, which we call a lesser pump, we prefer not to use that because that starts distally and then compresses moving up. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't stimulate the lymphatic systems to open it up to allow the fluid to move in the appropriate watersheds to connect the pathways. Okay. And so there is a higher level pump that we use that actually uses a gradient pressure similar to our manual lymph drainage. And it can start in the trunk and work distally, whether it be your arm or your leg. And there is also a head and neck one. And it provides more of the pressuring that we do as a therapist. And so then it starts proximally and then works distally and for about 30 minutes. And then the last 30 minutes, it works proximal to distal to help the fluid move in the correct fluid. So you're not moving fluid into one congested spot to another congested spot with the higher level pump. With insurances, there's guidelines that we have to follow, like they have to fail 4 weeks of regular treatment mm-hmm. and compression before some of these other pumps are provided. But there are some good pumps out there, and then there are some that we would rather not have patients use because it can potentially cause bigger problems.
Okay. Now, when you say regular treatment, so then if I understand correctly, once a patient has edema, erythema or no erythema, they should be referred to your clinic, period. That's a given.
The earlier they can start on it, the better it is. Okay. As well, we see two difficulties with the fitting the appropriate compression stocking with the appropriate pressure. For example, a lot of times with the lower leg, people will get knee-high socks, but they really probably should have a thigh-high manage the swelling all the way up.
So the moment there's this edema of unclear cause, is a good idea to refer them to you.
Yeah, because then for the patient, they can, the treatment's easier, as well as their pain and comfort getting the appropriate garments, compression, or the manual lymph drainage, whatever they may need, and to keep them mobile.
Keep them mobile. And typically, how often they see you?
About 2 to 3 times a week initially, depending on the severity of it. If it's actually just someone that's swelling and it's not that significant, we can maybe 1 or 2 times get them some appropriate compression, show them how to don and doff it, and get them going on some exercises. So obviously someone at a stage 4 elephantiasis, that could take months to work on the various compressions and wraps and pumps.
And I guess my last question is, I guess many of the patients that I see are what I would call stage 3 or 4, you know, recurrent cellulitis, etc. If they get really engaged with you, is there something reversible, or the best you can hope for is to control it so it doesn't get worse?
If they can get appropriate compression, we're obviously not going to get it down to the exact size of the non-affected limb, but
of course.
I feel like if they're compliant and we have the options now, especially if someone has mobility difficulties or in their size 3 or 4, there's Velcro wraps that can be used that people are much more successful in trying to use them, as well as the pumps do help if we can get them from home programming. So we can reduce them. They may not go back to comparable to the other side, but I do feel like there's still a benefit of it all.
And this is something you see in real life happening.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Okay. These are not like once in a million patients. You see that ones that are engaged, they get better.
Oh, yes. It's an effort to participate and complete the programming. But I feel like if people can feel better and they can move better and participate in their daily stuff, they're pretty compliant with everything.
Okay. And just to be clear, in the slides, you mentioned the referral system and who's available. And the clinics are in Wilmer, St. Cloud, I presume. And do you know of any other sites?
I believe Redwood Falls has a therapist as well.
Okay. And this is within wound care in general?
No, we're in the rehab center.
In the rehab center in Wilmer?
In the Central Care Rehab Center by the hospital is ours. Yep. And most of the other that do the lymphedema treatments, I believe, are in their PT or OT department. It just depends on the therapist, but they can be trained. PT and or OT can do either of them.
Oh,
but
okay.
Most of them are located in the rehab departments and not necessarily with wound care, but we do work closely with wound care and communicating what's going on and what may be needed.
And perhaps another question, insurance coverage of your visits and the equipment that patients need is usually good?
Commercial insurance, like if we have health partners, obviously you have your deductible portion that has to be met. Medicare will cover our visits. And this past year in January of 2025, Medicare started covering compression garments with a diagnosis of lymphedema or edema, which they hadn't covered in the 29 years that I've done this. So that's been very helpful for people because it is a financial aspect of things. And pumps can be covered by insurance. It's just there's some stepping stones, just like everything else that we do, that we have to work our way through. But we're pretty diligent if the person needs it, that we will work with the patient as well as the insurance to make sure hopefully they can get it covered.
Anything else you would like to add?
Again, like you said, the sooner that someone gets started on the treatment, the better their outcomes will be in regard to them and their life of being able to do more activities.
Yeah. Thank you very much for your time, Sarah.
Yeah, thank you.